I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
U.S. policy on the issue of Taiwan is unchanged as of today and as of the meeting that we had here today. It was raised. They always raise it on their side. We always make clear our position and we move on to the other topics. We know where they stand and I think they know where we stand.
What exactly did President Trump ask President Xi for when it comes to Iran?
He didn't ask him for anything. I mean, we're not asking for China's help. We don't need their help.
But he raises the issue.
We raise the issue to make clear what our position is and to make it clear so they understand, because I mean, it's logical we would talk about it given how dominant that issue is. Our position is very clear. Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. And that's what they were, you know, they were on the verge of building a conventional capability where they had so many rockets, so many drones that you couldn't do anything against them. They would hide behind that conventional shield to do whatever they wanted with their nuclear program in the future. That's why the president chose to act. In response to that, Iran has decided that they're going to take an international waterway and turn it into theirs and charge tolls for it. We're not going to allow that to happen. And that's why there's a blockade. It's a direct result of what they've done.
Now, that is Secretary of State Rubio. Very direct, very concise about what we did or did not give and get from China. Taiwan issue has not changed. We're not budging. China's not budging. And then the Iranian thing, as you heard him being questioned by an NBC reporter, what about Iran? So we didn't ask them for any help on Iran. We had nothing to discuss with them. We don't need their help. And China really wants the strait open. They want fuel from Iran. U.S. Navy ships are no longer escorting any vessels through the strait. But the blockade is still in place. So nothing can get into the strait unless we allow it. And we are still blockading the Iranian ports so they cannot export or import anything. That effort continues. This meeting with Premier Xi yesterday, the second time that Trump has gone to Beijing in his first term and now this term. If you expected something monumental coming out of it, there's some pluses, also some minuses, and some that wash. Basic wash, rinse, and repeat type thing. But I've got a special guest coming up later. You've heard him numerous times before. He is an expert on China. And what does he read inside the tea leaves of this meeting in China, in Beijing? Welcome to hour number one, Larry Connors USA, May 15th, 2026. And with Larry Connors USA, you're always going to get news, analysis, opinion, and education. You're going to leave each hour with more knowledge than you have when you begin listening that hour. In our next hour, we're going to be spending some time on Nakba, N-A-K-B-A. That is the Palestinian word for catastrophe. And that's what they refer to what happened 78 years ago when Israel became officially recognized as a state, its own nation. And President Harry Truman of Missouri was the first nation to step forward saying the U.S. supports Israel and having its own state separate from Palestine. There was a displacement of Palestinians, 700,000. But how they were displaced and in what way, therein lies the issue that has caused the conflict, not just the last 78 years, but generations between Jews and Palestinians. The Bible points out very clearly, Jews were already in that part of the world long, long before there were declarations of Jewish settlements, as were referred to now by the Palestinians, and Palestinian settlements. I don't have time in this program, even if I spent both hours, to deal with the issue of Nakba. But we are going to spend time on it in our second hour. It will be part of today's education. And later in this hour, the guest I mentioned, Gordon G. Chain, an expert on China. Perfect booking for him to appear today following this latest meeting between President Trump and Premier Xi. And I've got a lot of questions going beyond what you might expect. And the story behind the story, it was on this date, 1972, an attempt to kill Governor Wallace as he was running to be president. He had made previous stops in St. Louis, and they made another one following the assassination attempt. As a reporter, I talked to him on that visit. That'll be the story behind the story coming up later. Now, in wrapping up the meeting between Xi, just as he began the meeting with Premier Xi, President Trump speaking words of diplomacy.
I want to thank you very much. This has been an incredible visit. I think a lot of good has come of it. We've made some fantastic trade deals, great for both countries. He's a man I respect greatly. Become really a friend. We've known each other now 11 years, almost 12 years. That's a long time. And we've settled a lot of different problems that other people wouldn't have been able to settle. And the relationship is a very strong one. We've really done some wonderful things, I believe. We did discuss Iran. We feel very similar to Iran. We want that to end. And we don't want them to have a nuclear weapon. We want the straits open. We're closing it now. I mean, they closed it, then we closed it on top of them. But we want the straits open, and we want them to get it ended, because it's a crazy thing there, a little bit crazy, and that's no good. Can't have it.
But again, he says, we want to thank you for our time, our meeting. Again, showing restraint, being diplomatic, not bombastic. Premier Xi yesterday, as they began, and Trump had, of course, begun his statement, says, thank you, we've been longtime friends, I admire you, I respect you, you're a great leader for your people. Basically, elevating Xi to the point that some, even within Trump's circle, say, I think you went a little too far, you really praised him too much. He's a main and very dangerous threat, and an adversary. But again, this is diplomacy at work. Behind closed doors, what did happen? We do know this, according to President Trump, China is stepping up to agree to something that even Missouri Senator Schmidt said, I'd like to see come out of this meeting.
I mean, the last time we signed like 36 deals. This time, it's much bigger than that. Talked about soybeans for our farmers. They're going to do a lot of soybeans for our farmers. They're going to be buying a lot of our farm product, which is great. You know, they have an unlimited appetite, as the expression goes. They can buy as much as they, when you have that many people, they need it. And we have the best product. We're the best, some of the best of everything.
So that's a big plus, and that is something Missouri Senator Schmidt wanted to see happen. There's another developing front. For the first time, a high-ranking U.S. official, a cabinet-level position, the CIA Director John Ratcliffe, making a visit to Cuba.
We did know that the Trump administration was having these secret dialogues with Cuban officials for months now, but this is a uniquely visible visit from a cabinet-level official, which suggests that there's an opening here, some momentum to leverage. Ratcliffe was dispatched to personally deliver a two-pronged message to the Cubans, one that the U.S. is offering a genuine opportunity for collaboration in order to stabilize its ailing economy, but that window is not open indefinitely, and that the president is going to enforce red lines if necessary. Exactly what the red lines are or what the changes that need to be seen are not spelled out, but the writing on the wall is that the communist government that has been in power in Cuba for decades now would need to be replaced with new leadership. Part and parcel with that would be severing the ties that we know exist between the Russian and Chinese governments that have had a political intelligence foothold in Cuba for a long, long time. All of this sounds familiar because it's almost exactly the playbook we saw in the sequence of events leading up to the capture of Maduro in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. That's a change that directly led to the energy crisis that we're now seeing in Cuba. And Ratcliffe, in the same way, made that initial visit to Caracas to deliver much the same message to the now interim president, Delcy Rodriguez.
In other words, hint, hint, see what we did in Venezuela? That's not saying we're going to do the same thing that we did with Maduro, but look what we have done. And Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, again saying, we have offered the Cuban communist regime a $100 million American humanitarian assistance package that would provide significant assistance to the Cubans. The response is, Cuban leadership said, no, no. And of course, we have a Democrat legislator down in Cuba saying, oh, it's so bad and horrific down here. People, you know, they don't have food, they don't have water and everything. We are offering this. And Cuba says, no. But you're not going to hear her complain and call out. You're not going to hear her call and complain about the Cubans not accepting a $100 million humanitarian aid package because it deflects from their narrative. We'll spend more time on that in our next hour. In the meantime, we know the Democrats, especially the leftists, are making it clear the midterms and the next general election, there will be no rules. Listen to the ranting of Kamala Harris.
This is a moment where there are no bad ideas. A no bad idea brainstorm is what I'd like to call it. And in that no bad ideas brainstorm, we talk about what we need to do and think about doing around the Electoral College. We talk about the idea of Supreme Court reform, which includes expanding the Supreme Court. We invite a conversation about multi-members districts. We talk about, look, that if we win the Senate, which we should and we will, then the Senate Judiciary Committee should have rules that they put in place so when these people come before as nominees to the Supreme Court and lie, that they are held to account and consequence, not just that somebody goes on cable news and says they lied, but that there are rules in place to actually penalize people for lying to a Senate Judiciary Committee.
I actually like that remark, Kamala. And I'd like to see it imposed on Fauci and the others that shoved the COVID nonsense into our faces, down our throats, and putting many in graves. But you weren't calling for that kind of action then. And of course, even now, she's not talking for legitimate prosecution. She's still looking at persecution. This piece she put up on X the other day, I think it was well scripted. I mean, she did not just come off the top. I don't think she could have composed something like that in her head as she just said, open up the microphone and put the camera on me. I want to say something. No. This was well rehearsed and practiced. I believe that in full. But let's talk about what she said. She admitted, we're going to get in. We got to have the blue states take back control. We've got to go back into the Supreme Court and take control. Pack the court. They're saying all of this out loud. And she's saying there are no rules. Nothing is too far to discuss. Nothing? Nothing? Does that apply to a Maine senatorial candidate? Listen.
I do 100% believe that a political revolution is entirely necessary.
Yeah.
Bernie does too.
He is talking about using a gun. Maine Democrat Senate candidate Graham Plantner. I do 100% believe a political revolution is entirely necessary, possibly at the point of a gun. I want you to hear it one more time.
I do 100% believe that a political revolution is entirely necessary.
Yeah.
Bernie does too.
And Bernie does too. Bernie Sanders. Does that fit with what Kamala was pitching as you were listening a moment ago, saying there are no bad ideas as to what we need to do the next time? In other words, a gun, which the Democrats always say should be outlawed everywhere, a gun might be useful and viable. Is she accepting that? I'm not going to speak for her on that point, but I'll go back and let you hear more of her again saying, we need to come together and decide how we're going to win, and no ideas are bad.
When these people come before as nominees to the Supreme Court and lie, that they are held to account and consequence, not just that somebody goes on cable news and says they lied, but that there are rules in place to actually penalize people for lying to a Senate Judiciary Committee. That we agree that it is right to have ethics rules for Supreme Court justices. And let's put those in place. Let's talk about statehood for Puerto Rico and D.C. These are the things I think that we've got to do. We've got to neutralize these red states from cheating, including blue states expanding their maps. Mm-hmm. And all of this, I think, is look, we got to fight fire with fire. These folks are planning to win.
Yeah, Republicans are planning to win. But the rhetoric continues to escalate on the left. And the rhetoric has fueled assassination attempts against President Trump. And yet there's a new survey out that is going to be maybe startling to you, maybe not, as to how many people really believe that these were real events to take out Trump. A recent NewsGuard YouGov survey stating 3 in 10 Americans believe at least one of the assassination attempts on Trump was staged. The Butler shooting, of course, which nearly missed Trump's skull, 47% believed that was a real attempt. 29% weren't unsure. 24% believe it was staged. And yet a man died in the stands behind Trump. We're going to get into that as well more in our next hour. But coming up, Gordon Chang and his view on what we did or did not get out of China in this last meeting. And today marks the date of the assassination attempt of George Wallace. I interviewed him on one of his visits to St. Louis. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Another day must be another roofer in town. John Beal and I were talking. He said, you know, every time you turn around, there's a new roofing company. Many of them have no idea what they're doing. And the statistics show that many will be out of business within 2 to 5 years. Who are you going to call to help you then? You need to remember only one name, John Beal. John Beal Roofing. You have a problem? He can take care of it. And we'll be here for you. John Beal Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. Spring weather has everyone sneezing, even inside their home or building. Instead of saying Gesundheit, call Wellington Environmental to perform air tests to determine if mold levels are too high. Gesundheit is the same as saying bless you after someone sneezes, the German word meaning wishing you good health. Wellington Environmental can perform air testing that is simple, fast, and can identify issues keeping you from having good health. Wellington does the same for hospitals and nursing homes for indoor concerns. Give them a call. It's simple. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Tell Cindy, I need air sampling. They've seen it all. They can help you. Next time you hear Gesundheit, think Wellington. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington. True comfort is something you should feel every day in your home. It's the quiet of your mornings, the consistency of your indoor temperature, the way your home feels season after season. With Renewal by Andersen, from consultation through installation, everything is handled by one experienced team, built around your home, your schedule. Our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl, built for extreme temperatures. And right now, you can save 20% off your entire project. Plus, take an additional $100 off every window and door, up to $1,000. 20% off the entire project. Flexible financing is available, but you need to call by April 30th. 877-WINDOWS. RenewalByAndersen.com. 877-WINDOWS. RenewalByAndersen.com. It's that time of season when families, businesses are moving. For local or long distance, I endorse McGuire Moving. Get a date set soon before the schedules are booked. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire is constantly giving back to our veterans, such as Support Dogs for Our Brave. So with McGuire, you're getting excellent service and helping our vets. McGuireMoving.com.
This is News Talk STL.
And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull a mask off that old Lone Ranger. And you don't mess around with Jim. I don't do that.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I want to thank again Gordon G. Chain, who's an expert on China, for joining me today. You can follow him on Twitter or X. I strongly encourage you to do that because he's often posting remarks that have repercussions all around the world. Follow him at Gordon G. Chain, at Gordon G. Chain. He has a book, his latest book, Plan Red, China's Project to Destroy America. Once again, Gordon, glad to have you with us, sir.
Oh, thank you so much, Larry. And you know, your introductory music should be, you don't mess around with Larry.
I thank you. I certainly applaud that. I do appreciate it. I've got several things I want to go through, but let's do a thumbnail sketch of, did you get anything, or did we get anything new out of China that was unexpected, or we got, as I stated earlier, wash, rinse, and repeat?
We won't know for quite some time because, you know, most U.S.-China summits are canned. In other words, everything is decided beforehand. This one wasn't. So we will only know what happened in the coming weeks and months. But there's one thing we do know, Larry, and that is Xi Jinping was extremely dismissive of the United States. You know, on Thursday, in front of the cameras, in front of President Trump himself, he mentioned the Thucydides trap, which is a reference to a declining hegemon dangerously confronting a rising power. And then Xi Jinping talked about the, quote, new era, which in Xi Jinping speak is a time when China rules the world and the U.S. is irrelevant. So you can see the mentality of the Chinese leader.
And, of course, Trump, his remarks were very cordial, diplomatic, restrained, praising him and to some extent, to the point that as many had on the conservative side said, I think he went overboard. Your thought?
Well, I don't like that nice language, but I can understand what Trump is doing because he is showing restraint. And, you know, Trump is Trump, and he normally gets away of getting revenge. So, yes, I don't like it, but we can understand what our president was doing.
Yeah, and at that point, it's the public, and it's also the Chinese people supposedly seeing it. Now, the other thing, of course, as you mentioned, Premier Xi and the way he reacted, he brought up that you make a mistake with Taiwan, that could be a very dangerous situation, basically a threat.
It was a threat. And it was a hollow threat because Xi Jinping, with his intensifying purchase of the Chinese military, has made the People's Liberation Army incapable of invading the main island of Taiwan, at least if he doesn't use nuclear weapons. So this is the perfect time for the United States to go ahead with those arms sales to Taiwan, which will help bolster deterrence, and also it will make our friends happy in the region. So this is the time to do that.
Now, on the point about any accomplishments we did have, we did get apparently a food agreement that they're going to be buying more farmer products from the U.S., soybeans. So that's a big plus, right?
Well, yeah, but we don't know what the parameters are.
Uh-huh.
In January 2020, President Trump actually signed an agreement with China, the Phase One trade deal. This was in the East Room of the White House. And it was very easy for China to comply. They had specific requirements of buying U.S. agricultural products and U.S. manufactured goods. And the Chinese completely failed to honor their agreements. So we don't even have agreements right now, much less, you know. So we just don't know where this is going to go.
Well, there's another issue, and Trump should be in a position where we could start changing this. And I have not seen the moves inside the administration. That is, we still rely heavily on China for pharmaceutical products. 90% of our prescription drugs are imported. India is supplying about half of the finished medicines. But again, almost every major pharmaceutical we have has at least a raw ingredient from China.
Yes. When you look at key starting materials, which go into advanced pharmaceutical ingredients, there's basically about 800 or so medicines that Americans use, which are made only in China. So we have a critical dependence on China for that. Trump is trying to reduce that reliance. And on rare earths, he's working at Trump speed to make sure that we are no longer vulnerable to China for those minerals.
And is it true that we don't have them, or we just have not mined and gone after them because of all the regs of previous administrations?
Yeah, we have many of them, and we have not processed them. And that was a decision because of what you said, the environmental concerns. But we need to change that because we're not going to have very much of a society if we have to rely on China for these critical minerals.
In fact, I want to lay out for the public, the drugs we're talking about, folks, you would know, they're not all prescription. We're talking about penicillin, which would be a prescription, but then you got acetaminophen, Tylenol, you got ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin, and so forth. 95% of that, 70% of Tylenol, 40 to 45% penicillin coming in part, one way or the other, from China.
Yes, the generics are a critical vulnerability, and the number one and number two antibiotic are almost entirely dependent on materials from China,
which includes hydrocortisone. By the way, I'd forgotten to mention that. That's 90% plus. There was something else that happened yesterday. There was almost a standoff because the Trump security Secret Service detail was not being allowed to go into the room where the meeting was taking place with their weapons. And they were insisting, no, we have to have our weapons to protect our president to be in there. Now, we have never denied, to my knowledge, when she came here, we did not tell his security detail, you have to be screened for weapons, you're not allowed to come in with a gun. And I have never heard of that before. Help me understand what. Well, I know what was going on, but your thoughts on it.
Yeah, for every summit we have had these in Beijing, we've had these confrontations between Secret Service and the Chinese security forces. And you don't hear of these confrontations when a Chinese leader comes to the United States. So that's a clear indication China's just playing games with us. And sometimes these games can be very dangerous.
And so Trump goes into the meeting with our Secret Service agents, but they're unarmed.
That's right.
And the possibilities are endless as to what could happen at that point.
They are. I don't have a very good view of the Chinese communists, but I don't think that they would assassinate Trump in Beijing. At least they wouldn't do it with guns.
Right.
They might do something else.
Take him hostage? Take him hostage?
No, they could poison him. That's a real possibility. We know that the Chinese used sonic weapons on our diplomats in Guangzhou in 2018, 2019. So the Chinese are not above these really insidious attacks on Americans.
Well, what about one other thing that President Trump had said and argued, in fact, it appeared on last night's broadcast of Hannity, that it refusing Chinese students to our nation be an insulting thing to say to China, and it would actually harm the American university system.
Yes, he said that before because he wants to increase the number of Chinese students in our country by basically doubling them. This is, first of all, not a good idea because we know that a substantial portion of Chinese students commit espionage, and we cannot allow subversives into our country. This is just as plain and simple as that. And the other thing is that we've allowed, and this is not just Trump, this is his predecessors as well, has allowed Chinese consular officials and Ministry of State security agents to monitor, coerce, and surveil Chinese students on American soil. So this is on us.
But it also reinforces, in my view, the whole idea of the Asian population and students at Ivy League schools were being discriminated against, but we're going to say coming from China will probably allow them an opportunity to get in a little quicker. I still think DEI is in play.
Yeah, and the other thing is that every seat that is taken by a Chinese student in a university is one fewer seat for an American. And we know the Chinese congregate in the STEM topics, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And these are the things we need to teach Americans. So, you know, I'm sorry, but President Trump is absolutely 100% wrong on this.
And again, I'm quoting President Trump. It's a very insulting thing to say to a country, China. They would then immediately go out and start building universities all over China. So why not? Let them do it.
Yeah, well, they already have done it. They've got too many universities in China. And by the way, I don't want to insult any country, but I want to protect the United States of America. And that's President Trump's job, and he better well do it.
And I believe he will. I don't know why he would even get into that remark and suggest that, well, we need to not deny Chinese students from coming in. We're already talking about, I believe it's Senator Cotton is pushing a law that we should take any family members related to terrorists we've extradited, deported, that we should get them out as well.
Yeah, this is a real important story because we know that the Chinese agents, operatives, and soldiers have infiltrated our country. They are here to do us harm. They're studying our patterns. They're looking for vulnerabilities. And they're just waiting for the go signal from Beijing.
And we don't know how many came in exactly under the thank you, Joe Biden, open border policy.
Right. And we haven't been monitoring them. But we do know that with the increase in and surge in Chinese migrants across our southern border, there was a noticeable increase in incursions and attempted incursions into our military bases, as well as surveillance of our infrastructure.
All right. Gordon Chang, again, thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you, Larry.
All right. Follow him at Gordon G. Chang, book Plan Red, China's Product Project to Destroy America. Story behind the story, still to come.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I want to share something with you. Cooking a pizza using coal creates an amazing pizza. Only one place to get it, Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield. Of course, they offer a wide variety of pasta, but you just visit the website NapoliSTL.com, dine in or take out, and get ready for patio season. Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield Valley. Try it. You can thank me later. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. VincentsJewelers.com. VincentsJewelers.com. True comfort is something you should feel every day in your home. It's the quiet of your mornings, the consistency of your indoor temperature, the way your home feels season after season. With Renewal by Andersen, from consultation through installation, everything is handled by one experienced team, built around your home, your schedule. Our exclusive Fibrex material, stronger than vinyl, built for extreme temperatures. And right now, you can save 20% off your entire project. Plus, take an additional $100 off every window and door, up to $1,000. 20% off the entire project. Flexible financing is available, but you need to call by April 30th. 877-WINDOWS. RenewalByAndersen.com. 877-WINDOWS. RenewalByAndersen.com. When insurance companies know you're represented by Under Law, they know Under is not going to let you be pushed around. Their reputation is built on years of courtroom battles. If you suffer an injury or damage to your property, serve the insurance company notice. You have Under Law on your side, a St. Louis firm you can trust to protect you at every term. Don't settle for less. You want to win? Believe me, Under wins. Under, O-N-D-R, underlaw.com.
This is News Talk STL.
You can run on.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Now, Larry Connors with the story behind the story.
I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
B. Drummond Ayers covered Wallace for the New York Times 50 years ago.
Race was everything with Wallace. Whatever he did had a racial element to it.
But Ayers says Wallace didn't start out that way when he first ran for governor in 1958.
He started out traditionally, roads, schools, and so forth. One of his opponents started talking about race itself, blacks and whites, and he beat Wallace. And that's when he changed and said he'd never be beaten again.
In 1963, as governor of Alabama, he rose to prominence by defying President John F. Kennedy.
The governor is adamant. He made a campaign promise to stand in the doorway himself to prevent the integration of the last all-white state university.
And in fact, he did. You might, if you're old enough, remember the video, or you've seen it since. National Guard troops there, but Wallace is standing in the door of the university, not allowing any black students to enter, but of course he couldn't stop them. The National Guard troops did escort them into the university. That was in 1963. In 64, he decided he was going to run for president, the first of four efforts to become president. And he was using race at that point, as you were hearing that reporter for the New York Times at the time, B. Ayers, talking about that Wallace moved to that direction, doubling down on the race, because he did not make it an issue when he was running for governor at one time, and it nearly cost him an election. And he said, I will not let that happen again. But with race being pushed, there were a lot of folks looking to shut him down. Now, the guy that ended up shooting him on this date, 1972, Arthur Bremer, never stated that it was because of racial differences. He was basically looking for some publicity primarily, but again, it was on this date, George Wallace campaigning in Laurel, Maryland. He had had high ratings in a national opinion poll. And then this happened.
Then the people started cheering for him to shake hands. He removed his coat to shake people's hand. He started down the row shaking hands, and he got about three paces. And actually, at the time of the shot, I had my back to him, and getting the transportation worked out for the other people to leave the rally. And I heard the shots, saw Captain Dothert, is of the Alabama Public Safety Department, fall, and I saw the governor falling.
I thought it was a joke. I found it very hard to believe. I thought it was firecrackers until some of the Secret Service men and our own people began to yell to get him air, and then naturally I got on the microphone and started yelling for people to get back.
He just finished making a speech, and he's walking off the platform shaking hands, and this guy who had been calling for him to come over to shake his hand walked up and just pulled the gun out and shot about four or five shots.
That man was Arthur Brimmer, who was taken down, charged, later convicted. But again, why did he go after Wallace? While you ponder that thought, that evening, then-President Richard Nixon made a statement to the nation.
It is with great regret that on this very happy occasion, one that we hope would be a completely happy one, that we have had an incident this afternoon only 2 hours ago that all of you are aware of. Governor Wallace's condition, incidentally, has been described as stable. I just talked to Mrs. Wallace on the phone. She said his spirit was very good. An operation by the very best team of physicians in the Washington area is now taking place, and we're all very hopeful that it will be a successful one and that he will be returned to good health. And I know that all Americans, whatever their political affiliations, will not only have him in their thoughts, but in their prayers on this particular occasion.
Brimmer's diary, an assassin's diary, published after he was arrested, restated that he was motivated to kill Wallace in a desire for fame, not political ideology. In fact, he said, "I considered killing President Nixon prior to reaching Wallace." And by the way, even though Wallace was campaigning on racial divide in many ways, when he was in the hospital, he was visited by presidential primary rival Shirley Chisholm, a Democrat, a black woman. She was the nation's only African-American female member of Congress at that time. But she said, "I felt visiting Wallace was the humane thing to do." That was taking place again in 1972. As I said, Wallace visited St. Louis during some of his four presidential campaigns. One of them was in 1968, prior to his shooting, taking place at Kiel Auditorium, and race again, at that point, was featured as a dominant theme.
In this part of the country, who are today calling for communist victory. And they say that's free speech. But they mean free speech only if you let them speak. They don't want anybody else to speak.
Governor Wallace used to just love to use the long-haired hippie agitators, the folks who were out in the front lines of the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement.
I love you too, I sure do. Oh, I thought you were a she, you a he, oh my goodness.
The folks that he felt like his constituency just really disliked the most, you know.
And when he was in California, a group of anarchists lay down in front of his automobile and threatened his personal safety, the President of the United States. Well, I want to tell you, if you elect me the President, I go to California. Well, I come to Arkansas, and some of them lie down in front of my automobile. It'll be the last thing they'll ever want to lie down in front of.
That is part of a Wallace documentary, and again, you were hearing the man describing Wallace, New York Times reporter, B. Ayers. But it was preached at that point, those who hated Wallace, basically, If you like Hitler, you will love George Wallace.
I want to say again what I said in the beginning. You fellas better have your day now, because you're through later on. I got that much.
That would be the kind of pictures that we would want.
Well, just keep on. You get me 1,000,000 votes every time you show up. I tell you that much.
When that would be on television, and particularly back home in the South.
Come up here after I've completed my speech and I'll autograph your sandals for you.
People would just want to just leave the cotton fields early in the afternoon and get to the television and send whatever dollars they had right into the campaign headquarters. And by doing that, we were able to finance the campaign.
And again, Wallace was running as an independent candidate each time he ran for president. But he was getting a lot of money from people who liked what he said. Even if it didn't involve specific race, they believed that he was speaking a true statement. I grew up in the South, and I had relatives. And their attitude was, black people, they like their life. They're happy with their life. We're happy with ours. They have their place. We have our place. That was the view of even some of my relatives. Again, it was on this date, 1972, that George Wallace was shot. And then he changed. So there's more to the story behind the story.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Do you know why I endorse Cafe Napoli? All the locations? Visit any of them, and you will quickly appreciate the quality of food, service, atmosphere. So maybe I'll see you at Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Napoli Kirkwood, Napoli 2 in Town and Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles, right next door to Napoli C. Or maybe you'll find me at Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in the Chesterfield Valley. Now you know why I endorse Napoli. NapoliSTL.com.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Now, the end of the story behind the story.
He is not a racist. That's definite.
I'm going to vote for George Wallace because he says what I like to hear.
Wallace understood that there were people who were hurting, struggling, losing jobs. He tapped into that and appealed to that because the folks that are struggling often feel put upon. Wallace played that to the hilt.
I did represent more of the average citizen in this country than did any other candidate, based on the fact that the man who works each day for a living and pays the taxes and holds the country together has been ignored, except on election day.
How far he might have gone had he not been shot.
Again, that's B. Ayers of New York Times, who had done a lot of research and documentary on George Wallace. You heard earlier when he was in St. Louis at Kiel Rally, 8,000 showing up, heavily disrupted by protesters. That was 1968. And it marked an opportunity for him to pick up even more stops. It was the peak of his third party campaign. Again, he ran for president, 64, 68, 72. Then he got shot. And he visited St. Louis again in 76 after he had been shot. And, of course, the shooting left him confined to a wheelchair. And B. Ayers of the New York Times says, I think the shooting did reshape his thoughts going forward.
The turning point when everybody realized that he was turning was the crowning of the homecoming queen.
Congratulations here. You're a mighty pretty queen here.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
She bends down and he puts a crown on her and holds her both of her hands like that. It made the evening news. And very shortly after that, if not the same weekend, Wallace met with the Southern black leaders in Alabama because he was in another campaign at that point and he needed their votes.
Some blacks are willing to talk now about supporting a Wallace candidacy.
And I think that what men do in the future as far as improving the quality of life for all citizens, be they black or white, is really what's going to determine whether or not that was a great man or an effective man, not so much what he did in the past.
But the past was still there. It's history. 64, 68, 72, and 76, campaigning to be president. In 76, he returned to St. Louis. And that's when I had a chance to interview him at a hotel out near the airport. He was in his wheelchair. I don't have access to the interview because I was doing it for a TV station that I can no longer have an association with. So I don't have any of that to play for you, but I will say I did raise the question of race. And I could tell even in his tone that he had softened in many ways when it came to dealing with race. When you heard Ayers talk about he placed a crown on the head of the homecoming queen, she was a young black woman. He placed a crown on her and said, "I must say you're a beautiful young woman." He later said in the late 70s he was a born-again Christian and began to apologize. Once again, the words of Ayers from the New York Times.
He made apologies, asked for forgiveness, and in fact, Martin Luther King's father came in and actually prayed with him. And he went to the grave still apologizing, still saying he was wrong, still saying he was trying to do something for black folks. And in fact, he was at that point. He would do things as a governor that would help blacks because the worm had turned on this issue.
It would take him 20 years to abandon the politics of race. But in 1982, when he came out to run for governor once again, he won with crucial black support. Blacks had acquired political power. Now he needed them.
If you want to be cynical, and I can be cynical about George Wallace, what it says about him is that he would play anything with the race angle to get votes.
I made a mistake, and that's all pay in the past, and I'm sorry that I did that because it gave the wrong opinion of the kind of man that I was.
Had he changed, or was he just still playing for votes? Ayers said only the good Lord would know. Wallace's health was never the same after he was shot and crippled. He died September 13, 1998. The story behind the story coming up Monday, May 18th. Mount St. Helens erupted on that date, 1980. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
John Beal Roofing reminds you we are in the stormy season, and that means if you have even the smallest leak in your roof, you could soon have a much bigger issue. Call the John Beal to make sure that your biggest investment is protected. That call can save you major dollars. If you do get hit during a storm, John Beal has a rapid response team. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF, John Beal. There's only one place you can get pizza cooked over coals, Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in Chesterfield Valley. Of course, Napoli Brothers has a great selection of pasta dishes. Between the pizza and pasta, trust me, you will not leave hungry. Then, a few doors down, Lit Cigar Lounge, a wide variety of quality cigars, each offering a unique smoke. That cigar, some premium whiskey, all you need to do is enjoy. Lit Cigar Lounge and Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta. Chesterfield Valley. It's that time of season when families, businesses are moving. For local or long distance, I endorse McGuire Moving. Get a date set soon before the schedules are booked. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire is constantly giving back to our veterans, such as Support Dogs for Our Brave. So with McGuire, you're getting excellent service and helping our vets. McGuire Moving, LarryConnors.com. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. Vincent's Jewelers. .com. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Let's be candid, honest. No out-of-state law firm can represent you better than Under Law. O-N-D-E-R. Hometown roots, attorneys living right here with you and your family. When you suffer an injury because someone else was negligent, Under Law will make sure the other party takes full responsibility. You'll get full compensation, not a backroom deal worked out with some insurance companies. And of course, we're moving into the stormy season. And again, when you have a legitimate claim, you should be properly compensated. Under Law does not toy around with adjusters, investigators, lawyers trained to cheat you of what is rightfully yours. Under Law has already recovered millions for families across Missouri and Illinois. Under wins. Not just a catchy phrase, it's a fact. So I'll repeat it. Under wins. Underlaw.com. O-N-D-E-R. Underlaw.com. Wins.
This is News Talk STL.